Well, today we're looking at one of the things that's sometimes said about Christianity, that it's not relevant. So let's try and establish why people would say such a thing. Why would people suggest that Christianity is irrelevant to modern life? Well, at a very basic and perhaps trivial way, level, some people say things, and you've heard it before, Christianity is just pie in the sky until you die. You know, something like Muhammad Ali once said that, who became the boxing champion of the world, heavyweight champion. Would you listen to him? Others disagree. They say, no, Christianity is steak on the plate while you wake. Wait. Also, people say, but you Christians, your head is in heaven. It's your faith is too otherworldly. It doesn't have enough to say to me today about life in this world, such as the coronavirus. People might ask what Jesus has to say, and when Christians say nothing, they are criticized as being so heavenly minded that they're no earthly use. Perhaps more seriously, 50 years ago, now you can work out when that was, 50 years ago, 1970, a newspaper was highlighting the increase in humanism, the decline in religion and the increase in humanism, believing in a world without the need of God. And the Weekend Telegraph in 1970 commented, and this is what it said, "As for ordinary, God-fearing, Christ-imitating Christianity, it's plain old-fashioned. You're barmy, a freak, if you believe in these things." Well, that was 50 years ago. Maybe we've got over that. Well, I don't know if any of you read The Guardian, but just in the last 10 days, Michael Gove, a cabinet minister in the United Kingdom's government, and he regards himself as a Christian, I should say this, said something very similar. In this Guardian article, he said that Christianity is now regarded in England with condescension or dismissal when it's not with active hostility. To say that you're a Christian is to declare yourself as intolerant, naive, superstitious, and backward. And I think he's suggesting that that's his experience. If there's any modern reasoning involved, Christian belief is considered an actively disabling factor. Let me quote him now. He says, "Where once politicians who were considering matters of life and death might have thought to be helped in their decision-making by Christian thinking, by reflecting on the tradition of Augustine and Aquinas, by applying the subtle tests of just war doctrine, now Christianity means the banal morality of the fairy tale and the genuflection before a sky pixie's simplicities." I've got to explain to you, I didn't know what genuflection meant. I had to look it up in the dictionary. It apparently means bending down on one knee before a sky pixie's simplicities. I get, you get a little bit of the Church of England kneeling in devotion and prayer in that quote. So let me ask again, has Christianity become irrelevant to people in the 21st century? Why are some Christians apparently losing their faith? Is modern Christianity, or what we might call churchianity, simply irrelevant to God? Why the decline? Well, the evidence is that in the West, I'm talking about most of Europe, and I'm certainly talking about North America here, the evidence is that Christianity is crumbling. It is in decline. If churches are not decreasing in numbers, and most mainline denominations seem to be, they're holding their own. And I particularly think of Pentecostal churches there. They're not necessarily increasing, but they're holding in numbers. But the picture in the West is a bit grim. The authority and influence of Christianity does seem to be fading a little. Its adherents are disengaging. But across the world, it's a different story. Across the world, Christianity and the church is spiraling in growth. And I suggest that the church may be less relevant in the West, but Christ is always relevant the world over. And that's why, as a church, as the steeple here in the centre of Dundee, we're involved in creating new expressions of church. Not only what you see here on Sunday morning at 10:30, but also throughout the week, on a Monday, a Tuesday, a Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. We want to be relevant. When I was in the Netherlands, they used to have a phrase for this. They called it lage drempel, which meant lowering the edge of the pavement. You know, there's little bits of the pavement which are lowered so that you can drive onto them, where you can wheel on. That's exactly what we're talking about, allowing Christian faith to be lowered, the pavement level to be reduced so that people can more easily come into it, drive into it, experience it. The question of relevance is, what would it look like for us, I'm looking at you too, for all of us as believers, to be relevant to unbelievers? And in answering the relevance question, we have to project, we have to think about what we project of what we think on believers, on unbelievers around us. Once we think we've got a good grip on what their tastes and preferences are, then we take them on board, don't we? Now, we might not be right about it, but we think, we try to work out what their culture is, what their needs are, and then we take them on board and create new expressions of church out of them. But the problem is that the desire to reinvent Christianity is always about selling with what coincides with what people want. Let me give you an example. A few years ago, when I was in Rotterdam, we built a connection with a church in Edinburgh called St. Cuthbert's. And St. Cuthbert's is an interesting church. It's a very high church. But I got to know the minister quite well. And even though we were very different people, we enjoyed each other's company. And I remember hearing a story from him about how Peter Nielsen, who was an associate minister at that time, had been developing a new kind of church to clubbers. Hands up if you know what a clubber is. Oh, good. We're a really modern church, aren't we? Well, clubbers are not very modern, is it? But, you know, it's a kind of, isn't it, dance, social activity for young adults for many hours in the late night and early morning in big centres around the world. Is that right, John? Is that right? That's good, Gordon. Glad you know, you got me. So at St. Cuthbert's, what they did was they created a special place where clubbers could have a rest place, where they could have a time to reflect. If they were upset, they could get some support. If they had an issue, they could get helped. And the question was raised over a number of months and years, I think. The question was raised, what kind of church should St. Cuthbert's be to meet your needs? And what the clubbers said to the church people was very interesting. They said, don't change. Don't change your style or what you say. We might need you one day. At the moment, we are happy clubbing. But we want to know where you are, and we want to know that you'll be there for us if we need you. Now that, I think, takes a bit of unpacking, but is well worth thinking about seriously. It seems that reality and relevance is something that's different for different people, and dare I say it, for different cultures. The relevance question is a good question, but it shouldn't be the first question. When relevance becomes our priority, we end up being influenced perhaps not so much by the spirit of Christ, but by the spirit of the age. I remember what Chesterton once said. He said, "The Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It's been found difficult and left untried." And maybe that's what, in some part, those young people were saying to the folk at St. Cuthbert's. The world is changing, there's no doubt about it. Take modern technology, for example. It seems that the mobile phone Bible is now replacing the book Bible. Did you know that? How many of you have got a mobile phone Bible? Wow, you are very modern. The ubiquity of smartphones and social media makes them very hard to avoid, and they're changing the way that people practice their faith. Faiths are adopting online technologies to make it easier for people to communicate ideas and worship. But in the same way, that technology is shaping religious people themselves and changing their behavior. Many people scroll through their phones in churches, and you think they're not listening to the preacher. But in fact, what they're doing is they're looking at a Bible app called YouVersion, which means was installed and has, I think, more than 260 million followers around the world since its launch in 2008. One of the first things Christians did with the computer was to put the Bible into digital formats. And those digitized Bibles then made their way onto phones. To some extent, the mobile phone Bible is now replacing the book Bible. If nothing else, what we can say, the Christian faith is very good at adapting itself. We've adapted and reinvented ourselves in terms of faith for nearly 2,000 years. And smartphones and social media are just the latest developments in which are forcing a change. So the question, what is relevant, is very close, very similar to the question, what is real? What is reality for one person clearly is different from another. For some, today, it might be the coronavirus, whereas for others, it's something else. Family, business, jobs are important, but until everything is stripped away to the matters of life and death, maybe we don't get to the real nub of the issue. At this time of the spreading COVID-19, the coronavirus, Christian faith offers not only words, but love and compassion. And I think your question, Katie, and whoever asked it before that, is very important, Phyllida. I think it's very important to think about how we can connect with people and allay people's fears as best as we can. Do you know your neighbors? How are they doing today? Not 2 months ago, but now, this morning, how are they doing? Can you ask them or drop them a note through their doors? Can you ask them if they need something? Yesterday, and I hope she doesn't mind me saying this, Leslie Ann met an elderly man in Aldi who was confused, very confused, because there were no toilet rolls to buy, and he just couldn't work it out. What do we say? What can we do? The coronavirus is creating fear, anxiety, and a deep loss of confidence. Indeed, for some older citizens, it brings back memories of the tragic Spanish flu that killed perhaps more people after the First World War than during it. The Bible has a lot to say about what we recently called natural and moral evil. In the Old Testament story of Israel, what we have is a picture of a damaged world. However you put it, it's a damaged world. It's a world that's not about perfection. It's all about the presence of evil. I wonder sometimes, actually, why we spend a lot of time thinking about perfection. We talk about, well, I'm not perfect yet. Or, do you know I'm not perfect? Well, whoever said you were perfect? The truth of the matter is that we're a long way from it. And when you look at the Bible, only two chapters at the beginning and two chapters at the end even speak about perfection. Genesis chapters 1 and 2 and Revelations chapters 21 and 22. The bookends, if you like, of the scriptures. But everywhere in between is about the mess of human life. It's all about how it can be challenged, recognized, and sorted out through Jesus Christ. Jesus said himself that disaster and disease are always around us in this messed up world. He said we should not be worried about tomorrow, and our real treasure is not in the world, but is what is in our hearts. I suggest that that's about being clear about what we want. Also, be aware of what desires we're adopting from other people, from the media, for example. Though it takes a bit longer to spread than fear and anxiety, faith, hope, and love are the antidotes to the coronavirus chaos around us. In faith, hope, and love, Jesus shows us the way to spread the friendly virus of God's love. And that was the way of the early church. The Christians were the only ones who weren't afraid to pick up dead bodies lying in the street and give them a decent burial. They were the only ones who stood out and cared for those who were severely ill of infectious diseases. The early church showed that Jesus is there when we go out of our way. Think of the church then and its disciples who found courage after the resurrection. In the first century, those days were very like our 21st century. The church was on the sidelines and being looked down upon. In a similar way, and I made this a part of my Facebook posting yesterday, Martin Luther responded to the Black Death Plague in his day in the 16th century. And this is what he said. He said, "I shall ask God mercifully to protect us. Then I shall fumigate, help purify the air, administer medicine and take it. I shall avoid places and persons where my presence is not needed, in order not to become contaminated and thus perchance inflict and pollute others and so cause their death as a result of my negligence. If God should wish to take me, he will surely find me, and I have done what he has expected of me, and so I am not responsible either for my own death or the death of others. If my neighbor needs me, however, I shall not avoid place or person, but will go freely as stated above. See, this is such a God-fearing faith, because it is neither brash nor foolhardy and doesn't tempt God." Such wisdom from the 16th century. Such bravery from the first century. So how do the teachings of Christ fit our lives in a time of panic, anxiety, and fear? I think what we need to do is to understand and apply what the teachings of Christ is to the day in which we live, when people are afraid of their own mortality. The Christian life is meant to be lived out fully in a day-to-day world where we represent Jesus. Still, the most startling claim that Jesus ever made was, I am the way, the truth, and the life. To some people, We may be the only practicing Christians they meet. The way we live has a profound influence on their opinions of Jesus and the gospel. They may not read the Bible on the mobile phone, but they will read it in our faces and in our behavior. Somebody once said, all too often, people are not asking questions about God at all. They're simply apathetic. But when you begin to see ordinary men and women absorbed in something, excited about something, joyful about something, singing about something, you will naturally want to know what that something is. So said David Watson in the 1970s. Our scripture today reminded us to run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith. We've said Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. He's the beginning and the end. Last week we noted that most founders of world religions lived a long life and are known for their writings. But Christ lived only to the age of 33. He spent just 3 years in public life and is better known for his death than any writings. It is not simply that Jesus is the truth, but he is the way. He is the way and he is the life. He's the way and the life behind the very universe we live in. He's the key to life and death. He's the key to understanding our existence. Who am I? Where am I going? What purpose is there in life? And so a few years ago, when we used the catechism for teaching children in church, teaching anybody in church, the first question, which is very well known to all Presbyterians, is, what is the chief end of man? Thank you very much, Ronnie. The chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. And I just want to ask you, is that not a perspective that we need today? We're not changing. We just need to make that perspective visible. We're losing sight of the chief end of everything. The chief end, not only of man, but of everything. Waterfalls, education, subatomic particles, romance, art, science, sleep, golfing, mountains, humor, tears. All of these are to glorify God. And driven by that conviction, it makes a difference. Driven by that conviction, for example, John Sebastian Bach said the aim and final end of all music is none other than to glorify God. And based on that, he created some of the most original, powerful, and beautiful music ever composed. But just think about it. What if the primary factor determining where Bach's dots fell on the score sheet was not glorifying an infinite God? What if Bach was merely making music that people wanted? What if Bach simply wrote music that people would like? Do you think it would have been as powerful? There's a difference between art that's motivated by desire for God and that which is motivated seeking the approval of people. And if you live a life of reverence for God, you're relevant to the watching world around you. But if you live your life to become relevant, you become both irreverent to God and Jesus and irrelevant to the watching world. So we need to be careful. Do you remember a few weeks ago we were discussing the question about science and faith, and the key issue, one of the key issues we identified in the happy conversation between Christians and scientists is, what is existence? What does it mean when I say, I think, I am? Christianity is relevant when it says the chief purpose of every child, woman, and man is to love God and enjoy Him forever. Amen.